At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order our merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you, Dickie. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back of the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of an Englishman who's getting a 30 minutes bonus of every single show on Netflix right now, so it only makes sense that I give you 30 minutes to cover it over. Smackers was over 2 hours for me. Monday Night Raw, just over 2.5 hours. But still, that's a lot. That's a lot of extra content, so you get 30 minutes of me telling you about it. This is what I watched, this is what I sat through. I had this. I'm not saying I didn't skip some of it. It's not quite in AEW territory. Like, with AEW, you know when you are on break. With WWE, I'm not always clocking it yet. We are now into week 3 of the Netflix era for WWE, and we seem to have settled into a relatively okay groove. Data did come out that from the first episode on Netflix on Monday Night Raw to the second one, there was a drop of about 2 million viewers, but I don't know if that was live. Yeah, I know for one, I didn't watch Raw until, what day was it? Was it either Wednesday or Thursday? I finally got around to watching Raw. I watched live for that first big one. And even if they're saying my review, it's like, yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Yeah, I have been heeding my own words. Not only did I not watch it live, I didn't watch it until like 3 days later. It's like, I'll get around to it eventually. I mean, I've got a deadline. I need to have watched it by Thursday, because, you know, I need to do my bloody recording and actually edit it and get it out by the end of Friday. So, you know, I need to actually watch the thing. But yeah, so I there was still ratings talk and things, it appears like. I mean, with Netflix, they can just, not say stuff. But I think they're trying to advertise specifically the live numbers for things, because they're trying to draw in advertisers for the live shows they're doing. And Monday Night Raw is advertisement heavy. It's very advertisement heavy. I will say, I've got no idea what's being advertised in terms of what kind of ads they're drawing in. So I don't know what level of stuff they're getting. Probably because we don't get any of the ads over in the UK. Not even during the show, when they will shill something with a logo over the screen. They'll do something like that. Yeah, they're muting that now. But anyway, let's jump on over to a relatively standard week of WWE, setting up Saturday night's main event, going to be taking place this Saturday. So next week's show will be Saturday night's main event and Monday Night Raw, so I won't be talking about SmackDown. I'm assuming I'm getting Saturday night's main event, and I'm assuming in America it's going to be on Peacock. You Americans kind of get shafted a bit where you got to pay the one price to Netflix and one price for Peacock, whilst for me it's just Netflix. Anyways, jump on over to Friday Night SmackDown. 2 hours, 4 minutes on Netflix for me, and half an hour less on USA for them. Jump on over to San Diego, California.
Prettiest moonsault ever! My, oh my, Tiffy time!
The WWE Women's Championship, Tiffany Stratton versus Bayley. Depth of field, title match presentation and all for the Smackers main. Not a big 4K camera. It's all technique. It's all technique. I mean, it would look better with a big fancy camera, but you can get the same effect. It's just, putting a bit of effort into presentation, thinking about it. It looks good. I like it anyway. 15 minutes left on the show is a lot more positive amount to let this one flow. Well, I got 15 minutes, but that's because I'm a dirty European socialist. So I got no break from the match. I got a solid 15 minutes. And I was watching it thinking there must be a break at some point, but I didn't realise we were in break. Just like with the women's match last week, I didn't know when it was. And then suddenly a part of the presentation happens for them to be returning from break. It's like, oh, I genuinely didn't know you'd gone. Well, sometimes it fades to black, with my big asterisk saying they might have faded to black, but I'm writing notes. So there's a chance I just missed the fade to black. This match gave Tiffy the time and opportunity to properly play the baddie. After the way that she won the title got her some pretty cheery reactions, they're like, nah, you're a bad guy. You're a bad guy. Or at least she's staying the same character and they're not going to fully swing her. If she's going to get cheers, you can kind of organically do that without her having just completely shift her character once she's won the title. Bayley to Belly got a big cheer as the ad break camera got right in on Tiffy's underboob. Like, WWE camera work is so horny. Bayley to Belly on the outside. Tiffy Stratton then on her back panting. It's like, oh my God. And then he's like, okay, this is the shot to go to the ad break. That's fine, that's fine. It's like, you don't need to get that close. Don't need to get that close. What are you doing? this is not necessary. Yeah, this Saraya thing. Like, I'm a women's wrestler and all cameramen are pervs. It's like, well, yeah. Case in point, that is there is no reason for us to ever be that close. No reason. I mean, I know the reason. I'll keep pointing it out when it happens. I'm not going to let it go. But no, can't hide from it. Every decision in production is purposeful. This is purposeful. Bayley in the momentum swing for a fair while, but the final five or so returned to the competitive. Back out to ringside, and poor Tiffy had another bad time. Draped suplex off the announce desk with an oomph landing. Cue the WWE telly match finish. Bayley jabbered with Roxanne Perez, who she what been started an angle with in NXT. A tad more of a to and fro. Cartwheel into the Alabama that was blocked on the ringside, not halted this time, and immediately into the prettiest moonsault ever for a win in a lovely swift little finish. Honestly, we got a momentum halt, but I'm happy we just didn't get a Perez jump. Because again, I'd had like a pretty decent 15-minute stretch. It was relatively building up all right. For me, I enjoyed the flow of this one. I enjoyed the build of it. I thought they put on a really strong main event. Obviously, they were given the time to. Question mark on how much time, because I can no longer tell. I got a decently built 15-minute match. For all I know, they only got, like, they got under 10 on the actual television with two breaks. For me, it was 15 minutes, and it built really well. So it was nice to see this kind of match actually get the time to play out. And quite important for Bayley and Tiffany Stratton's kind of characters, where they're going, with this being Bayley's last hurrah before jumping over to Monday Night Raw and to start whatever she's doing for the Rumble and the road to WrestleMania. It feels like she's the person who's had the most matches and is going into WrestleMania being like, I've put in, surely I'm going to get something good and decent. And I'm like, in my mind, Charlotte Flair's one contender, Becky Lynch is the other. Like, I think that's what WWE are going to do. Bayley's been the workhorse, but it's almost WWE tradition to not give any reward for doing that and instead just put them on the pre-show, cough, cough, Dean Ambrose. So it's just like, I would like to see that not happen to Bayley. I really would. I just don't see her having a title match. And with the lesser amount of matches on a WWE card right now, where do you put her? Especially when you've got some form of Bianca Belair, Naomi, Jade Cargill thing. That's another match taken up. Basically, all I'm saying is it's a WWE curse. So if you're the workhorse of the year, you're just going to get shafted when it comes to WrestleMania. It seems to be happening again. It's like, oh, come on. If you've got somebody who's being the workhorse, like, come up with a plan for them. Anyway, we'll talk about more about Bayley when you jump over to Monday Night Raw, because she had her first display and a confirmation of jumping over to the red brand. So let's jump on to what happened over the rest of SmackDown. Ray Ray, San Diego's own, opened up the show. Another legend name entering the Rumble. Our Ray Ray is not often a title contender nowadays, but he's certainly in the best shape of the three older names from the noughties announced so far. Kevin Owens interrupted to be a dick, aka the best version of Kevin Owens. Winged Eagle Championship over his shoulder. There's nobody in the industry that I respect as much as I respect you. He's never had a match with King Ray, but Mr. 619 makes a point that if he does win the Rumble, he can't choose Kevin, because Kevin's not the champion. Cody's the champion. This angers the delusional Canadian enough to lose his cool. Remember, this is WWE. You're going to get a lot more cartoony, silly storylines like this. Treated seriously, but at the end of the day, you've got a man who delusionally is pretending to be a champion. It's a very silly villain thing. 619 attempt blocked, but after the ad break, we got Aldis granting Ray the match with KO outside the doctors. Who should step out of said doctors? Good old Cody. Mic problems throughout as the crowd chanted, "We can't hear you." But it was grand for me on my Netflix. An amendment in the contract needed with both Cody and KO to sign. Paperwork, the most riveting part of wrestling. But we've got a contract signing segment for Saturday night's main event. That show, the first one they did was just a character showcase. And I feel like if that's going to be what it's going to be like going forwards, then having a contract signing on that kind of show is absolutely fine. That is absolutely okay. It's just a character showcase show. And you can sprinkle some story stuff in there, but it's really there to showcase the characters to an audience that probably doesn't watch as often. As for the match later, Kevin Owens versus Rey Mysterio, a nice touch with KO continuing to wrestle with the Dusty Rhodes red elbow pad on. He won with the pop-up powerbomb after he hit the referee into the ropes to make sure that a corner topped Rey landed crotch first onto said corner. Winning in front of a crowd hot for their boy Rey. Cody made the attack after, but the Canadian escaped into the crowd and away from the champion's retribution. And also both titles will be relinquished ahead of the Rumble. And this was the night I truly felt it. They're telling me they're thinking about going with Jacob Fatu because they're doing the Triple H angles. Do you want a little bit of... Uh, do want a little bit of Fatu. This week, they put Fatu on a plate and kind of just like pushed it forward a bit. It's like, okay. We think you might like this dish. We've been fermenting it, we've been letting it boil, but we're going to put it out a little bit and see what you think. Jimmy Uso remained pretty over, getting the walkthrough backstage entrance and all, on track to beat Carmelo Hayes after H1M ran his mouth, it's on his titantron, ran his mouth like the cocky heel he is. And he was doing it whilst wearing Melo's shade, the cheek of him. But Jacob Fatu and Tama Tonga were there to interfere and DQ a match for the second week in a row, which brought out Solo, only for the crowd to keep on booing. It's like, okay, we've seen this segment before, and then maybe it's come back from an ad break, they'll be doing the booing, they'll be sweetening the audio to make it seem like it's way hotter than it is. No, this time they went against the formula, and with that happening, he just dropped the mic and left, leaving Jacob and Tama just in the ring. Consider, like, what is this, how the bloodline ends? And it was Fatu who picked up the mic. So this is what it's come to her. Tired of the hate, of the disrespect, and cutting a genuinely great, quick and hot, fiery promo warning. Like, you thought we were crazy. And I think I said it last week that I was way more interested in the packaging of Tama Tonga with Jacob Fatu than I was with Solo there. But suddenly you remove Solo, it's like, yeah, it still feels great. Yes, this really works. You've somewhat got the character intrigue of Solo. It was like, where on earth does he go now? But the far, far more interesting package is, what if Jacob Fatu was leading the guys who were meant to be kind of ruthless and scary? Because it felt more like we were being told that Solo Sikoa was that guy. Because the other ones were like, okay, we want you to actually act like these dangerous, da da da. The likes of Tama Tonga and Jacob Fatu have been able to play those notes, so we felt it. So we feel it so much more when they say that line about being crazy, about being dangerous. Like, we've actively seen it and felt it. Well, with Solo Sikoa, we were always kind of told it once they started doing this angle. The part about that sucks the most is that they had done all the hard work to make you feel it during the whole Bloodline run, to a point where they really heated Solo Sikoa up really well as that silent, scary dude. But the way they've done this turn just hasn't worked. But when one door doesn't quite work, there is also Jacob Fatu. There's just something special about him. And this week, it felt like it. It felt like this was them confirming, we're going to go with them. We're going to see what you like. Again, I'm going to put that plate on the table. I'm going to see how much you like it. But down came the oily plate of LA Knight, his music hit, the man attacking from behind because baby faces are allowed to act a bit smarter nowadays, getting back at the two for costing him his Intercontinental title last week. Brawn! Big brawny boy, barreled on out and tossed poor Tama around. Facing down, Jacob Fatu got a strong reaction with a pop for the rumble soundly secured, as well as a couple of singles matches, LA Knight versus Tama Tonga, but the bigger pop was for Strowman versus Fatu at Saturday night's main event. A match graphic with two shouty big lad faces going, ah! I'm actually out of all the stuff on Saturday night's main event, because like Jey Uso versus Gunther is like, perfectly fine showcase of two characters. But Jacob Fatu versus Braun Strowman, that's almost going to be guaranteed. I don't even know if it's going to be longer than 5 minutes. But if it's just 5 minutes of big barrel-chested boys going, just charging at each other with those big shouty faces. It's like, yeah, that'll be great. I'll absolutely adore it. I don't want any more from it. That's all I want. I want them to scream at each other. I want them to charge at each other. And I feel like it's a great match to just give Fatu a win over somebody like that. Give him this big explosive match against another big lad and shoot him into the rumble with some momentum. And the kind of match which it screams, he's not going to win the rumble, but we are properly going to start heating him up over this year. Anyway, talking about putting triggers on things, we'll jump over to the other notes. Because the first one is that Charlotte Flair got a return package. Me saying, oh, they might do Tiffany Stratton versus Charlotte Flair, wasn't picked out of nowhere. They did a Charlotte Flair returning package. So the multiple time women's champion is returning once again. I don't think she's a favourite to win the title, but if my two matches are Ripley versus Becky Lynch and then Tiffany Stratton versus Charlotte Flair, it's either Flair or Becky's got to win the Rumble. And to be fair, they could do Tiffany Stratton versus anybody. That Tiffany Stratton versus Io Shirai technically got teased a bit, but I never got the feeling that even though Io was champion, I never got the feeling that they were behind Io. And once Bayley became champion, I was like, oh, that's the person that they were more actually behind. Whilst they are properly behind Rhea Ripley. And I feel like to help establish Tiffany Stratton, they'll probably feed her somebody like Charlotte Flair to help get her over, help give her that big match, even if she doesn't win, to give her that big stage. Also, it was ribbed on Raw, but we started with our commentary team walking into the arena from backstage before talking over the wrestlers walking in, because Monday Night Raw, Cole was like, we don't need to get our special, like, super character entrances like you do on SmackDown. Naomi and Bianca Belair continued to plant those little seeds for something to blow up once Jade Cargill makes her return. It could be in the Rumble. They could play that whole angle out in the middle of a Rumble. They faced Nia and Candice, winning after an accidental leg drop to poor LeRae. Piper still continues to make me laugh in the security gimmick, so I guess not a bad time to remind me how I should take her seriously in the ring. She faced B-Fab in her display of warning, and Meechin making a kendo stick save afterwards. My notes last week were a little incorrect, and exposing my skipping, because Motor City Machine Guns actually faced Los Garza this week. Unless last week's effort was so unmemorable, I've generally forgotten it happened. Like, I'm not checking it. That destroys this entire bit, if I factually find it out. Just says a lot about the current booking of the tag division in WWE that feels so throwaway at the moment that I'm genuinely forgetting what's happening each week, and every time it comes on my screen at the moment, I'm like, ah, I can skip this. It's all about card placement and the language within that, and the language of film language stuff just telling me, he's like, oh, this isn't that important in terms of momentum and flow. So yeah, you've told me that the tag division isn't that important. So whenever it comes onto a screen, I get a feeling of, ah, I'm like, this is a long show. I can, you know, I didn't have to watch all of this. But it was a perfectly fine SmackDown, with the main event I genuinely did have a good time with. But it's getting characters into place for the Rumble. It's the build-up to the road. It's the road to the road. We're on a junction. We're not on a motorway. We're going to get there eventually. But we haven't got that long to go, because we've got Saturday night's main event this Saturday, and then Monday Night Raw, and then it's the Rumble. So we've got very little time to actually go until it's time. So doing these little bubbling notes, yeah, that's perfectly okay. The one thing I will say is, compared to the men's, felt like they've really stacked the Rumble to really give it that big gravitas to it, with all of those huge names involved in it, and there could be other names still to be announced. But when you compare that to the women's, there's what, maybe two? Maybe. I'm trying to think. My assumption is they're subtly saying that Charlotte Flair's going to be in the Rumble. They might even say that on SmackDown. They'll just be a lot more forward with it this time. Bayley got to outwardly say it. Nia Jax is probably going to be put in there, but we're doing Rhea Ripley versus Nia Jax at Saturday night's main event, so that's somewhat been held off. So I'll count Nia Jax at number three. But still, it feels like they've really not put anywhere near the same amount of effort into the Women's Rumble. And that somewhat kind of screams the way that the women's division as a whole kind of feels in what's been, I guess, since Ripley got injured, it's kind of bubbled a bit in this direction where, well, it's been all right, but it's not really felt like massively important. They've really, really elevated the men. So we'll say, in terms of like the booking of the men's, both their Rumble and both of their world title stuff, they've put a lot of effort into that in terms of just keeping that important feel and doing all those little things to give it that gravitas. That whatever Cody's doing feels incredibly important. As I joked about last week, they're pulling the, when Roman's not in the room, everybody must be talking about what they think of Roman. They're pulling that, telling to make build Roman up and him feel better. But they've done a lot to kind of build up the Rumble, done a lot to build up the men's division, but you don't see that same effort elsewhere. And I would like to. I'd like to see it, you know, trickle to other parts of the show to make me care about this other stuff. Because the women's division at the moment, it's not boiling hot. You got some white-hot characters, and I think giving Ripley the title is like part one of bubbling that proper. But they've got that little problem of, because they haven't really built up much of a division around Ripley. Like, she had a big feud with Liv Morgan, but who else is there? Like, who else more, like, more does she then go to? Once she's done with Liv Morgan, who is there to face? I guess you've got to bring over the likes of Bayley and Nia Jax, just because there isn't anyone. And SmackDown, you can bring back Charlotte Flair, and that kind of immediately was, oh, because you've had Naomi and Bianca Belair bubbled with Jade Cargill in the tag division. Now you get into WrestleMania season, you can actually fire them properly and actually build something up. I just like to see some progression and effort put in. It's basically what I'm saying. But yeah, anyway, let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw. Week 3, live on Netflix, Dallas, Texas. 2.5 hours long. it's crazy to say for me that it's only 30 minutes longer than SmackDown. But yeah, you know, they've got a 3-hour block, but they used 2.5 of it this time, which I'm absolutely fine with that. I'm absolutely fine with the actual runtime at the end of it, once all the adverts are cut out, only being 2.5 hours. Like, that's far better than my worry from that first episode they did. I was like, whoa, there's a lot going on here. Like, no, they've dialed it back. I don't know how much of that 3 hours they're using live, but recorded, oh, it's a lot easier to get through. Still overstays its welcome. I still struggle with that third hour every time. But I will say, these first 3 weeks on Netflix, I've not struggled with them as much as I was when it was a TV product. But still, you know, 2 hours is best. Anyway, jumping over to Monday Night Raw.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate. Which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan. Keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
For it again, Seth Rollins floats up over the top. Jackknife covered by Rollins now. Shoulders are down. Rollins got it!
the main event in Dallas, Texas, Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre. The man given 20 minutes to have their angry dance. I mean, it was 28 when Seth came out. Like, just to show you the level of time wasting on these Netflix Raws so far. It's like, maybe that's what hit into the, it didn't feel like it was too long for me to watch. It's like, well, I technically just kept skipping until they got to the lads out in the ring. So I was like, oh, I'll skip 8 minutes just on this match alone. Never mind the rest of the time wasting. In terms of the match itself, I was happy to see Chops Galore to start us off before that reinforced Netflix announce desk did not give an inch and looked like shit to bump onto. Like, good God. It was really nice to have what felt like a focused main event. No ringside hellos or third man interferences, just two lads hanging out, having a back and forth wrestle. You've done all the hard character work, you don't need to stop the match to tell your story. I mean, I will get to that note. Throwing us two lads very familiar with each other's offense, with it being advertised as a WrestleMania rematch, so they lent properly into that. Really enjoyed the flow of this. Like, don't get me wrong, it's a 3-star WWE telly match still, but it's a great example of how to do one of these better and keep it flowing nicely. The final 5 minutes still saw Seth lose his cool and set up Drew poking him in the eye for a Future Shock DDT near fall, but it didn't stop to tell the story as much of to a degree that we've seen during the Trips Teddy era so far. That's my second take, and my belly gurgled during that one. I'm going to keep it. I've done too many retakes. Ending in a quick roll-up win for Seth, with the pissed-off Scotsman threatening to claymore his head into the ring post, which brought out Sami Zayn to make the save. Which was a great note after the segment he had with Kevin Owens early in the show, which I will get to. But the show ended in a tropey WWE style via an accidental Helluva friendly fire. But the initial note was appreciated of why Sami came down in the first place, which bounces off what happened in the Kevin Owens segment. But the actual ending here, oh, it's just very... it's very make you, everybody in there look a bit dumb. It's very tropey. Just accidentally Helluva kicking Seth in there going, It's like, you want me to believe that we're going to go an entire week without Seth Rollins watching back the footage on Netflix? It's like, no. For me, that's perfect advertising in a way. On the show itself, one is like, oh, I went on Netflix and I watched da-da-da-da. Then I watched Monday Night Raw and I see the thing. It's like, yeah, you do product integration advertisement by just saying that he was watching Netflix and then he decided to put Raw on and saw what happened. Or, you know, he did the standard, I'm angry at you because you kicked me, but it's an accident, but I'm still angry. Like, no, please don't give it me. But this did make, for me, two fun main events where Gemini just got invested and had a decent time. Nothing blow away, which is kind of what I meant with the 3-star chat, but it's relatively standard for a WWE main event, but showing you how to do it. If you're going to stop the match to tell your story, have it be quick, have it immediately fold back into something happening in the match. I'm not a big fan of the match fully stopping. Tell the story. It's like, no, you don't need to do that. You can tell this in the match. So it still technically was, they stopped the match, focused in close up, Seth delivered dialogue, but then it immediately snapped back into the match. So it's not as bad as we've seen in more recent times. Before we get to the Zayn Owens thing, let's talk about Jey Uso, the number one contender for Saturday night's main event. And Uso kicked off the show, getting the crowd to yeet and cheer. It's always nice to just immediately know that I'm able to skip 7 minutes. Ding, that's 17 minutes skipped on just entrance shit. if you're totaling it up. That's never mind adverts, I've already found 15 minutes I skipped. Yeah, 7 minutes into the show, and I know nothing has happened. I can get into the atmosphere, but also, it's 7 minutes till he's actually speaking into the mic. Then, the lad only got halfway through his second line before the World Heavyweight Champion Gunter came out and went, fuck that, and just strolled on out. A promo segment hitting on the exact same notes from last week. Gunter not liking Jay dancing and partying like a company mascot. Not gonna lie, this story is doing so much to rehab the damage of insecure Gunter from the champion's previous feud. The sentiment is still there and has very much damaged his reign. I do not know why they went that way. But this is by far the better way to present the lad. One of us has main evented WrestleMania and it ain't you. Got to the Austrian and a brawl ensued. End segment. Match is Saturday. Quick little feud. That's why I'm not like ribbing on it too much. It's like, but technically what if it's not? It's like, it's a Saturday night's main event showcase title match. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's fine. This is an exactly perfect kind of build for a match that's really just there to showcase your champion to the Saturday night audience. Like, that's all right. It's absolutely okay. It's a 2-week build. I'm not going to rib on it. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Good old Sami Zayn. He came out, also announced he's in the Rumble, and his promo was really, really good, which shouldn't be a surprise if you've watched enough Sami Zayn. The man's so good at getting you right behind him, just the way he delivers his fiery, passionate promos hits so well. But just when he's got the crowd cheering for him, Kevin Owens, for the second time this week, runs in to interfere a promo. A simple, how do you want to do this? How is this going to go down from Sami? The smart goody knows what Kevin Owens has been up to and also knows what I teamed with them. I teamed with the Usos and the Roman Reigns. I've seen what, how you've taken up with other people. So go on then. What are you going to do to me? And Kevin Owens just doesn't have any of that. It's like, yeah, Kevin Owens played the card of, well, I know you. You forgive people. That's what you do. Reminding him that Sami has forgiven him in the past for things that he's done, the same way that Kevin Owens has forgiven Sami Zayn for the things he's done. The note of similarity with his promo and Ray in this was telling the lad he believes he can win the Rumble and face him at WrestleMania. Dangling the carrot, as long as I walk out of the Royal Rumble as the WWE champion, with an added, I've got your back. You're my best friend. I know if I need your help, you'll be there. So with the manipulation into Sami, it's like, yeah, you will help me out. I know you will. Which is, for me, that is the note needed for him to actually properly turn on Sami. I really do really like they did this, because this can really fire into the WrestleMania match between them if they do that. Where, I feel like they set it all up. I feel like it's perfect to do it. They've done the groundwork. This is the note that was needed. To be fair, if they hadn't done this note and they just went ahead with the feud, I might have said something similar to, oh, it's not quite as hot as I would have liked it to have been. But I don't think I would have been able to pinpoint why. This is the segment that makes it. And hopefully I will remember this within like 3 or 4 months' time after the WrestleMania match. But for me, this is the segment that suddenly, like, character-wise and heat-wise, sets everything up. This is so needed. You could insinuate this segment or something like a sentiment like this, but actually giving it to us, I feel like you can now pinpoint it and point to it. Because Kevin Owens, like, he's seen Sami Zayn, like, forgive Roman Reigns and help him out. But that's what Sami does. He forgives people. Like, he knows, just like in the past, that he doesn't have to take much of a insult from it, because he knows that Sami Zayn is also going to forgive him and help him out at the Rumble. Right? Right. So that's when the interesting note happens of Sami Zayn does not help Kevin Owens at the Rumble. Then how does Kevin Owens take it? Then who does he lash out at? I was like, well, Sami Zayn, obviously. Because it's not going to be Kevin Owens. Very similar note to the Drew McIntyre character of blaming everybody else but himself. But I really did appreciate that note. And it immediately gives Kevin Owens something to do. That's the other thing as well, is what do you do with the loser for a title contendership thing? Even if I know they're going to lose, which is the other problem you got with Cody, they've done something here to make me care about the loser, rather than being like, we knew he was going to win, so it's not that interesting. But now it is interesting, because you know what's going to happen to the loser. You know how he's going to curtail afterwards. You know who's going to lash out at what direction he's going to go. Oh, there's a Women's Rumble 2, by the way. I don't know if I touched upon that earlier. I was like, yeah, there is. We've not really mentioned it, but yeah, there is one. Busy Bailey went from Raw last week to NXT to Smackers and back to Raw again. Now officially on the Red Show and declaring for the Rumble. The sound cut out half of Nia's lines, but I got the gist. Like, she's in the Rumble 2. The match was like Roxanne Perez at ringside again as she does the same tour Bailey's doing. Like, hey, where's the Perez praise for making all these shows too? Jazz mucked up a back bunt drop and landed on the poor lass's arm bent unders. Ah, poor Bailey. Damn it, she doesn't make it easy to applaud her improvement sometimes. Much improved, but still Nia Jax. The crowd still got properly behind the finish and Bailey flows, so no negative too big really. Like, I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I'm assuming they kicked up more about the spot with the arm more than it actually was necessary. After the match, Rhea Ripley charged on out to brawl with Jax. After Jax attacked our Aussie champion backstage during the show starting walk-ins at the beginning, Rhea on that stiff Netflix announce desk shouting for a match at Saturday night's main event. I'm assuming that's so they can give Rhea Ripley a title match and showcase her on the NBC platform on Saturday night, and then also put Nia Jax in the Rumble as like someone big to try and get over. New Day, finally on the telly. JBL, the special guest Texan commentator for Kofi's match against Rey Mysterio. New Day's music hit and the two immediately cut that off. Like, no, we told you we're not using that anymore. Working perfectly to immediately incite New Day sucks chants as they cut their promo down to the ring. The heat is still hot. This is still by far the best angle WWE are doing right now. And you know Kofi's heel because he's wearing black jeans and also shaved his mustache. Only a villain would don a mustacheless beard. The match itself gave Kingston lots of time to draw boos with plenty stompy. Woods grabbing Ray Ray's ankle halted the 619, but got himself kicked out. Only for Mysterio to nail it anyway. Knees up kept the ball rolling, but Kofi was all on his lonesome. Into a nifty, unique little counter win. SAS leant back out of as Kofi flipped forwards to hit the move, Ray just hooked a man's leg and snatched the win. Post-match beatdown broken up by LWO. And I'm very much looking forward to whatever New Day do in the Rumble. I feel like there's one note where they can feel ostracised and pushed out by them not being in the Rumble. And he can say, well, you've been losing matches as well. You're not just everybody against you, but you're actively losing matches. So why would you qualify for the Rumble? But also, the thing that's far more interesting to me is if they, I would put them in the Rumble, specifically put Kofi in. So he can specifically not do a Kofi spot and you highlight the fact of that away. It's just a very different style. Or somebody else tries to do the Kofi spot and he stops them. So that's the other thing where he doesn't technically need to be in the Rumble for that. I would prefer for him to be in the Rumble, but, you know, you'll get a massive pop if somebody tries to do a Kofi spot and then he's just ringside and stops them. Or he pops up from the crowd and does it. That would get a huge reaction. I reckon people would love that type of thing. And on to the other notes from the Night Raw. I do still have to get used to Cole plugging a tasty, tasty Snickers, but I can't hear him. I know he's doing it. I can hear him in spirit. No fear, I still saw him doing the yeet dance. Like a drunk granddad at a wedding, called Barrett. Oh, bloody hell, he's not even a dad level anymore. The man that talking about former football players in WWE got our first mention of John Laurinaitis since the lawsuit. Aside from boo, all I'll say is Shifting gears without a good transition, CM Punk got up to be in Jackie's arena interview area. A promo running through the other lads declared for the Rumble. You put Hulk Hogan in there and I'll throw his dusty ass out over the top rope. That was a much better read of the room regarding Hogan than stuff the WWE themselves are doing. just the way that he felt like he was feeding off the crowd, and as soon as he said it, it was like, yeah, that's the actual kind of attitude towards Hogan at the moment. I'm European, so on top of free healthcare, what other bonuses do I get? JBL making his entrance, shaking hands with other men in cowboy hats behind the commentary desk. Is that like honking the horn to other truck drivers? Karrion Kross was out in the crowd with Jackie, addressed the Wyatt Six, popping off to Smackers before switching to Sammy. The crowd didn't seem to care for Kross that much. Ludwig Kaiser out in the crowd. Just like Gunter, he's not that impressed. But he ended on Penta, getting Dallas prepared for the lad and hinting at Ludwig Kaiser being Penta's next. I also got to see Pete Dunne make his entrance, and he got the crowd to boo with his Birmingham. And that's it for the bonuses. Nothing crazy this week. There's a bunch of arena interviews and a few entrances. Penta had his second showcase match against Pete Dunne. American Made got to deliver their mission statement for the year as well, all four going after gold. Honestly, liking the nudge to making it truly about struggling against the Lucha style for Chad rather than, I haven't got a problem with the Luchadors, I promise. Which is how I jokingly read it when it was the debut for Penta, and the way that we were building that up in the weeks leading up to it. So I feel like this was a much better way to show that it's specifically about the style, and he's trying to find a coach person to help him with that. And that leads him to Dominic Mysterio, who gave Chad a mystery contact to helping out in exchange for a future favour. As for Penta versus Peter, we got full Netflix budget Spiral Pyro. The folk who owned the rights to his masks didn't let AEW sell them, but they are letting WWE do it now. The WWE crowds have immediately taken to his mannerisms. This match was a lot more like your standard competitive showcase compared to last week that leaned heavier on the competitive side, given it was Gable. The audience again loved the running destroyer, plus loved the way they filmed Penta's tope, with the camera positioned right next to the apron to look up and follow the man as he flew overhead. Made him look really, really cool. And finally, the Pure Fusion Collective continue to somehow be lesser than the sum of their parts. No entrance as they faced Io and Dakota Kai. Not even me, not even for bonus content European. Like, nope, no entrance for you. Turns out when I wasn't watching over Christmas, they wrote Kyrie out via a Pure Fusion segment. Let's see, it really does sound like I'm describing a shaving ad. If they did a Pure Fusion segment. It's like, yeah, you're advertising razors or something. One note. Jesus Christ, Zoe Stark hit arguably the best looking missile dropkick I've ever seen her hit. Go watch it. Even I wound it back. I went, oh, Jesus. I wound that back. That was excellently done. But again, Monday Night Raw, a perfectly fine show. Bubbling stuff up, getting characters into their right places. Like, it doesn't feel, in terms of like super exciting or white hot. Again, it's Triple H thing, but it does feel competent and it makes sense. And you know that when you get to the Rumble, all of these pieces are purposely building something. But they're playing all the right notes to build for the Rumble. It just doesn't mean that, you know, it's super exciting as we're doing that build. It's all blocks that I go, oh yeah, that's good, that's good, that's good. But that's the thing with the 3-hour show, is even when you got some amazing segments, again, like the Kevin Owens Sami Zayn thing, which I was applauding, like the main event that I was applauding. To be fair, I wasn't even that down on the Jey Uso Gunter stuff, CM Punk's little interview. Like, it's all, that's all fine. Like, they were all good segments. But the show as a whole, because it's 3 hours, drags and outstays its welcome. So I, overall, I'm like, eh, it's fine. Even though, if I were to, like, individually watch these clips on TikTok, I'm European, I can still do that. Oh, no, you can do it in America. It was all a scam. I could still watch, I could watch those on TikTok, I could watch those on the YouTube stuff that they upload on their channel. Then it would seem like a far, far better show, because like, oh, this is White Hot segments, da, da, da. But when you watch Raw as a whole, it's like, yeah, it's, you just come up, you walk away from it going, yeah, it was fine. It's mostly just because when I'm watching the main event, I'm mentally kind of done with the show by that point. So watch what you want to. Check out the segments you want to. That's how you really should be watching a weekly WWE TV show. Like, 100%. But still, if you're like watching on a weekly basis and you're not in a position like me, if you're not somebody who's like got to get through this stuff and make notes on it, I wouldn't do it. I just watch what you kind of want to. Like, I guess I think I said last week that all three of like Dynamite, SmackDown and Monday Night Raw were okay. Like, everybody had a perfectly fine week. This week, I loved AEW this week. I had a great time. I don't know if it was the arena or what, but yeah, I had a great time with AEW whilst Raw and SmackDown, like, they had parts of them that I liked, but I didn't overall enjoy the shows. Yeah, it's odd how that happens. you can play really great notes because there's time-wasting feeling stuff elsewhere. It drags the entire show down. It's minus ones over a course of a period of time. Anyway, thank you for listening and liking and engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never take it for granted. Rate us on the stars on the iTunes and things like that. Really does help us out. It's also the main feed for Social Suplex and for my own personal feed and for the feeds of everybody in Social Suplex. If you go to their individual feeds of the shows, it really does help get the podcast out there. So thank you to anybody who's done any form of reviews or anything for us. It really means a lot. Yeah, subscribe to the YouTube channel, join the Discord, and thank Dickie for the merch. With that, I'll be back this time next week after a perfectly fine week WWE. Next week, I jump into Saturday Night's main event and Monday Night Raw. And the week after that is where we will review the first pay-per-view of... They're still calling them premium live events in the Netflix era. The first special show of the Netflix era in the Royal Rumble. Or what are they going to pull out of the bag? So with that, I'll see you next week. I bid you adieu. Adios.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.